If you're ready, I'm ready.
Hey, Keith.
I'll go ahead and call us to order this morning for the regularly scheduled Board of Supervisors meeting on June 24th. If the audience would join the board in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Next is public comment section number one. This comment period is for the public to address topics on today's agenda. And we're not seeing anybody move towards the mic. Agency report, Storytime Child Care Center. Jane.
Hi.
Good morning.
Hey,
Jane.
Hey,
yeah.
From Maxwell with Storytime Child Care. We provide infant care, full-time, school age, before and after school, and preschool program. We're licensed for 42 kids, and right now we have 30 enrolled. I have 9 employees, four are full-time and 5 are part-time. Our enrollment's down right now due to the economy, but hopefully that's going to turn around real soon. And I've got a great staff. They're real dedicated. Things are going real good, and our summer program kicked off last week. So,
How many you anticipate in the summer?
Right now, it's probably where we're at. We'll be at about maybe 35 this summer.
Okay. What's a normal summer, Jane?
Normal summer is around 35 to 40.
Okay, so you're close.
We're getting there.
Mm-hmm.
Right. A lot of parents, what they do is they start out and think that this child can stay at home by themselves, and then they call and cancel that and bring them back to daycare. So, but we're doing really pretty good.
How long have you guys been open down there?
We've been open for since 91. Yeah. I think it was 91. Pretty long, considering
yeah.
we're such...
Yeah, actually, 20-something.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think it's more
it
than
that. It was 13.
Yeah.
I was thinking 91. I was thinking 2001 when I came on board, which was 13, yeah.
Yeah, so, I've been there almost 19 years, so...
20-something years, yeah.
Yeah, so I've been there 19 years, and I have a great staff. I don't have a big staff turnover at all, which I'm proud to say that.
You talked to Mr. Harrington down there about making sure you had a van accessible to meet all your needs and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, I wish I could do that. I could have Aaron Davenport be my bus driver.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I haven't seen him for a while. I'll have to get on.
He's doing okay.
Okay, good.
Well, Jane, child care is so important in our smaller community, so thank you for what you do.
Yeah, thanks for it is today. Very important trying to keep these kids on track.
Yeah. Good luck.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Next is the consideration of minutes from 6:17.
Move approval.
I'll second.
Got a motion and a second. Any additions or corrections? Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders?
Aye.
Toot? Aye. The minutes are approved. Consideration of personnel actions.
Move approval.
Second.
Motion and a second. Anything further? Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders?
Aye.
Toot? Aye. The personnel actions have been approved. On the consent agenda, we're adding road closures number 1444, 1445, and 1446. One utility permit, 1454.
Move approval with noted changes.
Second.
Got a motion and a second. Anything further? Clinton?
Aye.
Sanders?
Aye.
Toot? Aye. The consent agenda has been approved. That takes us down to additional items. Consideration of resolution 14-105 FY15 Appropriations Resolution, Lisa Markley.
Good morning.
You mean we've actually got to have money available to spend when we get to July 1st?
Oh, so what I've done is prepared appropriations resolution for the upcoming fiscal year, the budget that was approved back in March. This what I put in front of you is what we've done in the last few years, and that's 50% of the dollars budgeted are being appropriated, with two exceptions. The two exceptions are general county betterment, I did 100%, and countywide services, I did 100%. That just works better for us if we do that. I do have a few departments that have higher expenses in the summer that we may want to appropriate some additional dollars for, but I thought I'd kind of see how that went before I made that.
It seemed to work well for us the last few years, appropriating 50.
Yes. So that's what I'm asking for, is that July 1st, which is the next time you meet, would be the beginning of the fiscal year, so I really need to get that beforehand so we can pay people that week.
If there's no questions, I'll move approval of Resolution 14-105.
Second.
Motion and a second. Anything further? Sanders.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Toot. Aye. That resolution is approved. Next is Resolution 14-106, Interfund Operating Transfers. Lisa Markley.
When we prepared the budget, one of the portions of it is the operating transfers that you approved. In order to do those transfers, it's by resolution of the Board of Supervisors. These are the FY15 as they sit. transfers, we may change those depending on how the budget flows throughout the year. But if you would approve that, then the maximum that I'm going to transfer these amounts, $100,000 to the supplemental from the general fund, $550,000 to the secondary from the general fund, and $550,000, and $1.8 million to the secondary roads from the Rural Services Fund. What I typically do is do those larger transfers half and half, so when taxes come in is when I do them.
And I'll move approval of Resolution 14-106.
Second.
A motion and a second. Anything further? Sanders.
Aye.
Clinton.
Aye.
Toot. Aye. Resolution 14-106 has been approved. Thanks, Lisa. Discussion and consideration of program for public information, PPI, because Leanne loves
acronyms. You got to love acronyms.
Ann Harder.
I just have a few slides to go over quickly with you. And I will call it just the PPI. It is the Program for Public Information that we're following guidance from FEMA and the CRS Coordinator's Manual. This is part of our path towards being a CRS community. CRS is Community Rating System, recognized by FEMA. Just on that note, we will be having our community assistance visit towards the late part of August. So we definitely are on the right path. Just what is the PPI? It really is to develop kind of an education outreach projects, identify the mechanisms needed to implement those projects, identify staff, resources, and the list goes on and on. It really is to educate, prepare, and aid residents on floodplain mapping and general information, flood and stormwater protection, and best practices to consider. It's set up the draft PPI with the following organization. It starts with the background, and I'll go over each of these briefly. PPI team, community needs assessment, the target audiences are identified, projects and initiatives, and then it addresses follow-up, adoption, and then FEMA guidance does require appendices. We were required to take attendance of the meetings and keep meeting notes, and those are required to be attached to this document. The planning process we followed was really quite simple, just five steps. This is a slide you've seen countless times. Identified the team members, held the team meetings, came up with the draft PPI. The PPI team, developed the recommendation to the board, and we are here today with the orange part with considering adoption of the PPI. Just a quick slide on the history of floodplain mapping in Story County. It actually dates back to 1977. That's when the first maps were developed for Story County. They were translated then into flood insurance rate maps, or FIRMs, on June 1st, 1983. So from that point forward, structures in the floodplain that had a federally backed mortgage or were required as a condition of mortgage have flood insurance, that's the magical date that we look at for pre-firm or post-firm structures. Then on February 20th, as the board knows, new digital firms were adopted. They are county-wide maps, but this only applies, again, for Story County to unincorporated structures. With the mapping revisions that occurred with that D-firm adoption in 2008, about 95,000-plus acres of land were identified as being in the special flood hazard area. And I've got a slide here shortly that shows the changes from the 1983 maps to 2008. So on June 1st, 1983, that map, SFHA, that right here, SFHA, Special Flood Hazard Area, that's floodplain. Total floodplain acres was 28,000 plus or minus, and that included 33 structures. A structure is basically anything. It's not just a building. It could be a lean-to. It could be not just a single-family dwelling. It could be a house, a lean-to outbuilding. With the new maps that went into effect, that number went up substantially to 95.5, roughly, and another 99 structures were added to the map floodplain. This is based on kind of a rudimentary building footprint, too, and as we go further and further with this program, we'll do more detailed analysis. Now, these are not the number of structures that have flood insurance, and I want to point that out. Flood insurance, just because you're in the floodplain does not mean you have to have flood insurance. If you have a mortgage, then you do, a federally backed mortgage, your lender will require that. But I want to point this out because there's not a direct corollary between the number of structures in the floodplain and number of floodplain policies we have. And I'll explain that in a little bit more detail. By all means, if you have questions as I go, please throw them out there. This is part of the background information I presented to the PPI team as outlined in the PPI. We did follow the manual, the CRS coordinator's manual guidance. On determining the PPI team, the makeup has to be at least five people, and half of those have to be stakeholders and non-county employees or city employees, whatever the jurisdiction may be. We did have 9 members, 10 if you include me. I was more the facilitator and then the pulling everything together, but technically I'm a member, so we're 5 and 5. We really tried to target individuals to be on the PPI team that were engineering, the lending community, insurance community, real estates, Iowa State, etc. And my appreciation goes out immensely to these individuals. It wasn't extremely time-consuming, but it did take about 5 hours of meeting time on their behalf, as well as time to review the materials and provide input. We initially scheduled 3 meetings. We were able to get out in 2, which is always amazing. What is really critical in the document, after the second meeting, the PPI team had an opportunity to review the draft again and provided feedback. That feedback is listed as was received in the document, but it was also integrated into the draft document you have before you. And again, as following the guidance, all the meeting notes and agendas and sign-in sheets are attached in the appendix. Part of the PPI includes a community needs assessment. So the table on the left is the types of policies and number of policies, flood insurance policies, currently in unincorporated Story County, or as of March of this year. Total, we only have 23 policies. If you recall, we have 130-some structures. So not everyone has a policy in force. I attribute that to a low turnover in a lot of those structures that are in the floodplain, and I think we'll see the number of policies increase as those properties turn over. A lot are long-standing family properties. And what we have are 6 policies for properties actually located in the floodplain. 4 are standard B, C, and X zone. So X zone is those properties outside of the floodplain, or that are at the minimum in the 500-year floodplain or just outside. And then 13 are preferred risk policies. They're outside. They've done everything right. These are the ones that they get the best rate. I cannot tell you where these policies are located. It is confidential information that FEMA does not share even with local officials. So we cannot do any type of comparison as to the years these structures were created, nor any type of analysis, which is unfortunate because it would assist us in our marketing and our discussions with these individuals. But
do we know, Leanne, how many of the 132 structures are actual residential?
Yes.
What is
that? I don't have it off the top of my head, but
because I would imagine that would be a better direct correlation to the 23 than just, you know, a shed that's sitting out in the middle of nowhere.
Right. And I think the next go-around that we have with this PPI, if it's adopted, that'll be the next level of review that we're able to do as we finalize updates to the building footprint we have in GIS. Again, it's kind of older analysis older file that we're using for this preliminary analysis, and we'll drill down into it.
Okay. Thank you.
Part of the community needs assessment, though, does include the statements from the flood insurance study that explains the watersheds we have in Story County, and it goes through. It's verbatim from the flood insurance study. And then we also looked at valuation of single-family dwellings, and those have increased over the past 5 years for unincorporated Story County, with one dip down in 2010. And then we also did analysis of the commercial industrial lands located in the floodplain, and those are all delineated in plan. The plan also then identifies six target audiences, and these are those audiences towards which the strategies I'll get to shortly are targeted or put in place to address. We look at targeting properties to all the residential, commercial, and industrial and public properties. These aren't just residential property owners. We have the repetitive loss areas, and this is actually one entire property, which I'm very pleased to say Story County, because we did buyouts several years ago, we only have one RPL, repetitive loss property. Technically on the books there's two, but one is the buyout property on O'Neill that I have to go through the paperwork again with FEMA to have it removed, but the structure just does not exist. Next target audiences are areas that are zoned commercial or used commercially, and then they have floodplain layer on it. Structures that were added with that 2008 DFIRM, so those are those almost 100 new structures, and that's where we'll drill down and identify what type of structure it is. If it's a low damage lean-to, unless it's not properly anchored, we're really not going to have immense concern. The real estate lending and insurance companies, the development community, and the last target audience is just the general public, and that is where we go a little bit beyond our scope of unincorporated Story County. Projects and initiatives looks at 10 messages, and I won't repeat these. These are all, they have a table for each of these messages. It's a way to identify public outreach programs to use to get information out in regards to floodplain management, flood insurance, and mitigation. So a three-pronged approach. We have outcomes that are associated with each of these 10 messages. And it does set forth priorities for fiscal year 2015. It starts July 1st, 2014, and ends next June 30th. So each of those 10 messages has a table that looks like this, with the message, the first column. The outcomes are next, so we have the message, and then what do we hope to achieve to address that message. This is a requirement of the manual that we have towards which CRS topic is this related. This is so we can get the points. That's why that's in there. But then the target audiences. And this is, in this case, this message is marketed towards all six target audiences. And then there are specific strategies that are geared towards that message. There are 23 strategies throughout the document. Some are common for each message, too. I mean, you'll see compile the information flood protection library that goes to all the libraries. That's common throughout. So once this is adopted, if the board takes action on it, Story County will need to follow up. We'll need to monitor the projects as they develop, and any organizations that have volunteered to help. And we have received that kind of feedback, that they believe in this and the role that this can play in floodplain management. And then annually, the CRS coordinator, which you've appointed as me, will report the results back to the Board of Supervisors. We'll also record input from PPI team members. So next spring, I'll reach out to that same team, PPI team, say this is kind of where we are, give them a preview of the report that you will all receive. What do we need to modify? And then bring that forth, similar process to you all, and have a readoption for fiscal year 2016. It is an annual requirement. It's part of the recertification package to CRS. We're not certified yet, but that's part of our overall package we'll need to do. And then your alternatives are to adopt the draft PPI, adopt with some revisions or delay action until another meeting, and that gets us to the end of that nice little graphic. I'll be glad to answer any questions.
Leanne, to what degree, I know it says you send out notification to all the households in the floodplain and this and that, but is there a mechanism to have some type of educational opportunity to sit down with people to see if they really truly understand not only the risk that they have, but are other mitigating factors that they should be, you know, considering? And I mean, I can understand receiving a lot of documentation, a lot of information, but how many people truly understand, you know, what it is that they, what their risks are? And then the second part of that question is, how would this information play into the decision the city of Ames is undergoing as they are discussing the overall way of mitigating flooding into the city proper and so forth?
I'll start with the second part. It really doesn't fit into this, what the direction the city is doing, because this is targeted only for unincorporated Story County. I would hope that as Ames goes forward, they look at CRS as an option, the community rating system as an option, and through that process develop this PPI or a similar PPI and outreach tools. It's a great benefit to property owners that have to have flood insurance. This first part, several years ago, well, almost 9 years ago now, it was the last time we sent out You're in the Floodplain brochure. And it's amazing the results we get immediately. People, one, want to argue it, which is understandable. And this was based on the old maps. What we're anticipating when this next round goes out, which will be later this fall, the response will be triple what we received. I like your suggestion of maybe holding educational workshops as part of that component, because what we find is as they get the brochure, when they want to discuss what the brochure says and what the ramifications are for the property, and it is on a property-by-property owner basis, which is quite time-consuming. So there may be an opportunity, rather, your property's in the identified floodplain, here's a workshop to come see what it's all about. And that might be more a more effective outreach tool than just sending out a brochure. Then we can have a more deliberative conversation with the property owners.
I would just think that if this may be an effective tool that we've not necessarily used in the past. Obviously, you're probably going to get a small core group, but to those people, several of them, it may make a big difference in, you know, not only future planning and so forth, but they also can be tremendous advocates for the whole area and anybody who is contemplating building in areas that are in floodplains or flood fringe areas, etc. So I don't know. I'd be interested in seeing if you thought this would be something that you could fit in, and if so, what type of support or recommendation you would need from the board if we would try to hold some type of sessions, and where we would hold them. You know, I think all of those things are could be potentially a good outreach to our citizens.
Well, I think, I mean, as it is written right now, it is, I think, let me get it. It's under several messages, but the one I went to is you need flood insurance, which is on page 12. Mailer sent to all properties in the floodplain. Maybe we could build upon that and just say an invitation to educational workshops. We're putting the workshop materials together, if this is adopted, for the lenders and development community. It's not going to be a far reach to say that there's going to be three separate toolkits. There's going to be one, just simply modified for the audience towards which it's directed.
I think that's great. I just agree with Wayne that before we send out the new notifications that, oh, by the way, you're in a floodplain, it makes a lot of sense to have a place we can direct them. And a workshop, to me, makes a whole lot of sense.
Yeah. And we're really working on modifying the website. We've moved it out of a department specific to under services, because it is a service that Story County provides, floodplain management, and really addressing the three-pronged approach towards insurance, mapping, and regulations, and building our presence online on the insurance end of things. So we have more information we can provide, providing more links to FEMA. I just sat through a webinar this morning on the impacts with some of the revisions to Biggert Waters 12. It's not as great as we thought it was originally going to be. The rate increases are still going to be in effect. It's not going to be a lump sum now, though. It's a more 5% increment, and Iowa will be hit. Again, not as great and not as swiftly as originally intended with the BWR 12, but even the revisions do impact Iowans.
Well, if there's nothing else, I'd want to offer our appreciation to you and the other members of the team for your work on this, and I would move adoption of the PPI.
A second, and well stated.
Motion and a second. Anything further? Sanders?
Aye.
Clinton?
Aye.
Tuke? Aye. That's been approved. Thanks, Leanne. Next is IRVM, everybody's favorite.
Joe, what's going on?
Well, I'm managing vegetation, believe it or not, this time of year.
If we're not growing vegetation right now, Joe, there's never a time we'll be able to grow it.
Right on. It's been good. It kind of started off cold. Let me see. Thanks for making me the weed commissioner, by the way. I appreciate that.
I'm sure you wake
it's
up every morning and think
it's
that.
Challenging.
I think you're the only one that put your name in, Joe.
There you go. So the last time we left off, I think it was burn season, and we had some crazy weather during burn season. We kept things under control. Some of our friends throughout the state got in a little trouble with the low humidity and high wind, but we did end up getting a few roadsides burned, three or four for about 10 acres, you know, and 10 acres of a roadside, that's about 2 miles. So little spots here and there. We kind of went right into planting after that, and we made several trips up to Dakin's Lake. We have that pretty well stabilized. There's several acres. I haven't quite measured it on the map yet that are still just in temporary seeding, but that should be because we're going to get water lines, and you were up there, Wayne, so... But we did end up, after we met the next week, getting everything up there seeded to permanent that we could. And we had someone come in and crimp some straw down. And we had a lot of rain after that, so things should be looking pretty good. It's greening up, and the lake's full, as you know. So I don't want to take Mike's, job to say that, but things are looking good up
there's
there.
There's fish in it.
And there is fish.
Right.
Moving on to roadsides, we followed around the road department, Darren's crew and Todd's crew that did a lot of work last fall. And again this spring before it got wet, we seeded about 19 spots, but that only added up to about 7 acres. And all that was with the hydro seeder. And so a lot of driving around, but getting things caught up. We have a few more to do. We did help the Kiwanis out of the city of Nevada at the trailhead, the trail in town. We did a little 2-acre prairie, helped those guys out, had a day throwing seed out with the high schoolers. And there's also another 5-acre prairie down by Maxwell. As you go through Maxwell and take Highway 210, as it curves around before it hits Indian Creek, there's a spot to your north. And that was always kind of wet and weedy, so the city wrote a grant for the seed. And we seeded that just a couple weeks ago and mowed it for him. So that ought to be looking good. And then weed season came. So Tyler, he's been out night and day with a little lamp on his head. I think we've covered all the hard surface roads. And again, the weed law, I have a lot to say about the weed law. It's old and it's out of date. It's hard to update it. You can add weeds to it, but you really can't ever take any from it. So there's a lot of plants on that thing that really don't cause a producer economic loss. Although they may think, you know, just because it's on the list, we'd spend our time out there spraying everything that lived. So we try to pick the plants out there that are actually, you know, going to cause some economic loss to the producer, site distance problem, maybe some health issues with the poison hemlock. I brought that in one year, ground it up and put it in your coffee. You guys are pretty tough. It killed Socrates, you know. So, and we're still going at that. We're hitting gravel. The crew's out today. We have one spray truck going with Tyler, and we got the Polaris, and they have a trailer, and a two-person crew with that, and they can get down in the wide right-of-ways. So now, you know, this is where I add, they did call me up yesterday and say, you know, we spent 2 hours on E57 over by Slater spraying all these thistles, and somebody came in with a big red mower and tractor and mowed right after we sprayed. So still need, you know, a little better communication going on with that. It wasn't the county did that. It was, somebody else. And I did put a press release out reminding people. I don't know if you saw that, but there are some exemptions to the rule, but in theory, you really shouldn't be mowing until July 15th to help our wildlife out and things like that. So, burn season, spray season. The drill has been going out more. Our drills, we've had about 10 landowners this year. A little bit of CRP going in. It's a lot of waterways after the rains last year, so that's good. So there are some neat things happening.
Good.
Drainage ditches, yes.
I ask.
So one of the reasons our burn season wasn't so spectacular is Tyler went ahead and tried to get those piles pushed together that are out along, get within the 50-foot easement, the access easement. And we talked to just about everybody, and they're all good with that. I did talk to another gentleman a couple days ago, and he's like, you know, those are never going to burn until we can get a bigger piece of equipment in there and really stack them in there. So I think once the crops go out, we can get, one of the road departments something big to get those stacked up and we can burn them. But everybody's on the same page as we are. Now, we did have the contractor go back up and clear out some of the brush that they left previously. I know we had some letters on that and some calls, and they did go back up and rework that, and it's still, you know, there are some plum thickets and things left back away from the ditch, and I'll take some pictures and show the board. Last I knew, we kind of agreed that was going to be the look to some degree, as long as we didn't have a lot of bigger trees falling into the ditch proper, doing anything to the structure or impeding water. So Finco won't be coming back until the crops are out. So we're going to hold them off. They'd be driving through alfalfa fields and mudding things up. So we're good until September, October. And, Paul, we need to talk about that a little bit. I haven't gotten back up there to look. So that's where we're at with drainage ditches. We'll start in August. That'll be our month to go ahead and get our crews ready to start doing some more work.
Outstanding.
You going to be at the meeting tonight?
What's that?
Being at the drainage meeting tonight?
What drainage meeting? You want me there?
Well, I don't know, Paul. What do you think?
We're going to hear the engineer's report for the Marshall Story District.
Oh. Where's it at?
Auditorium at the State Center. West Marshall High School.
I don't know where that's at. We'll chat.
You can probably get along with that, actually, if you don't. And I know you got Little League to coach, so.
We lost, but we made it to the semifinals.
That's where you go. Thanks, Joe.
Thank you,
Joe. Next is Emergency Management, Keith Morgan.
Good morning, gentlemen.
Hi, Keith.
First off, I'd like to say that I look forward to working with Leanne and partnering with her on that PPI. There's a lot of good information that goes out there and dovetails well with what we do. And hopefully we can get that message across about mitigating some of that risk and being prepared through insurance to take care of themselves as individuals. And speaking of mitigation, the Story County Hazard Mitigation Multi-Hazard Multi-Jurisdictional Plan has been adopted by all applicable jurisdictions, and the appropriate documentation has been sent to both to Iowa Homeland Security and to FEMA Region 7. Under the planning topics, emergency management made minor revisions to the Emergency Support Function 10, which is HAZMAT, and it's been approved both by Emergency Management Commission and the Local Emergency Planning Committee. We have worked on a revision to ESF3, which is Public Works, and it's been sent out for comment, and it will be brought up for approval at the next commission meeting. Our office is also working with the Ballard School District to refine emergency plans to deal with a school shooter through the implementation of the ALICE program. I will be visiting each school to review their plans, provide inputs, and to work with them to enhance their ability to reduce the risk of this threat and other possible disasters. Iowa Homeland Security sponsored a change to Iowa code and received funding to allow them to purchase a mass notification system for the entire state. It's going to be at a reduced or no cost to the different to each of the counties. Right now, they're in the process of selecting a vendor for the services and developing the administrative rules for this initiative. By code, access to the system will be procured by the state and will be through our office, the Local Emergency Management, and our office is going to work with the Sheriff's Office, other jurisdictions, and the E911 Board to evaluate the pros and cons of going with this new system offered by the state.
And Keith, remind me, currently we're code red.
We are code red.
And Ames has their own code red.
As I understand the system, Ames has an enhanced code red.
Right.
Through the county. Nevada has code red on their own.
So we've got three different?
It is code red is the provider, and then there's differing levels of service to each of those three. As I understand it, Nevada's is completely independent, and the AIM system is tied, as I understand it, to the Story County system. Okay.
And no feel yet for who the state is going to contract with for this statewide system?
No, but we should be getting that very, very soon, and we'll try and get as much information from them as to the services that are going to be offered, because there could be some difficulties transitioning from one system over to the other. And that's some of the stuff that we have to look at. Is this an enhancement of what's being provided? What's the cost benefit to us? And we really want to take a look, involve all the stakeholders in this to take a good look at it and make sure it's what we want to do both short-term and long-term before we make any commitment either way. Under preparedness, we've been doing some training. Our office conducted EOC training, and I'd like to thank, again, the department heads and the elected officials that allowed their employees to participate. The training demonstrated the value of conducting regular training. First off, in our training session, we discovered during the phone migration, EOC phones numbers had been incorrectly reassigned. Hats off to our IT department that quickly and immediately developed a workaround on this and implemented this option to correct that issue. Secondly, we found out that our radio repeater system was also having intermittent problems. We found this out because we had enough people down there using their radios that it kind of saturated the system. We've since called Raycom, and for a $51 part, we think we've got the problem solved. We're looking forward to conducting training like this again to get enough people in there to saturate the system and to really test it. Most importantly, the training simulated the first couple hours of EOC operations when it's going to be the most confusing. And I feel it did a good job of helping our EOC personnel understand the process of gathering the appropriate information that they're going to need and how to begin the coordination process that's going to be essential to supporting our communities that are impacted by a disaster. Having the different sections there and manned allowed the interaction between the different functions and let them practice those coordination skills, how you communicate, what information do you need, what are the limits of your responsibilities that will be essential during getting us up and going during an actual event.
I think this is a big deal. I mean, we've spent 3 years really laying the foundation just to get to this point where you could really go through an exercise of actually activating the center, for that first couple hours, just to start to get a feel for how it's really going to go. I just commend you on getting to this point.
Thank you. And it was through a lot of support. When I first brought up this idea, You might remember I didn't say we were going to get it done in 6 months. I laid out a one-year plan just to get us to the point where we could start getting folks in there. And we've had nothing but great support from both the department heads of elected officials and their staff, which is important. The comment that I got down there is, we need to have more of this training.
We do, yep.
And we will do that. Our next phase is to bring in the individual sections, functions, and work with them again to allow them to really craft their individual computer stations to meet their needs. Because the needs for somebody that is working public safety is different than those that are working on the mass care. So, again, we're going to take the time, sit down with them, go over those first few hours and say, who would you be calling? Let's get some web links put on your computer so that you can go to them instantly and get them comfortable with using those functionality.
The reality is, if we have a major event here in Story County, we're always going to be somewhat, to some degree, underprepared. The question is how close to prepared we can get. And I just feel like you're leading us much closer than we were when we started this process.
Thank you. And that is our objective. And we also have turnover. So that's why we're going to have to continue this training. We're looking to go back and replacing some of those folks that have left and bring in new people and get them going. We intend on continuing with this. And we're looking to ratchet up the pressure every time that we get the folks in there. And that was part. We had an exercise controller that was giving them inputs, teaching them how to manage their time. If I'm giving a briefing and the radio goes off, to prioritize, which is one of the most important things. As I've said, the most important thing we can have in emergency management is well-trained people. You can give me lots of toys and trinkets and things like that, but if I've got people that are trained and capable and confident in taking over and doing what the best they can, because every situation is going to be different, that's where we're going to make our money. And that's where the time and effort that these folks have invested is very much appreciated. Another area that we've looked at is mass casualty training. Our office participated, along with folks from Mary Greeley, the Medical Examiner's Office, and Story County Sheriff's Office, in training and exercise provided by Iowa Homeland Security, which focused on responding to a mass casualty. The exercise scenario was a good one. It was a school bus accident on the Story County-Marshall County line, and it highlighted the need for us to develop have a well-developed medical response plan with a regional perspective. Given our limited transport assets and an emergency room capacity, we have to look regionally when we talk about these things. Specific areas that need to be addressed are communications, situational awareness, transportation assets, and implementation of the mass casualty incident procedures on scene. As a follow-up to to this exercise, our office developed a guide that has time and distance to our other emergency rooms around us, the communications that are resident within those emergency rooms, and their ambulance and ER bed capacities. We're going to be continuing that training that we talked about in the EOC, and we're going to work with Story County Public Health personnel to improve their ability to function in our EOC as the ESF-8 coordinator. For responses, shortly after my last update with you, on March 31st, DuPont had a corn stover site northeast of Nevada that caught fire. The source of the fire is suspected as being lightning, and it consumed approximately 5,200 bales of stover, requiring response from multiple fire departments across the county. This event was different than others, that it is suspected that embers from the stover fire started small fires off the DuPont site. These fires were immediately extinguished by units that had responded to the stover fire. Our office, through after-action meetings with DuPont and the fire departments throughout Story County, also the State Fire Marshal and the Fire Service Training Bureau, have gathered information on the fires. We're looking to coordinate the development of a plan to address concerns identified by during these after-action meetings. We are working closely with the agencies mentioned to gather data on the characteristics of these fires and to see if current firefighting techniques are the best they can be to fight these fires. And if need be, we'll look to try and put information out there on how to modify firefighting techniques. This is going to be a long-term project, but the effort is important not only for Story County, but other areas in the state and across the nation that are also conducting these operations. We had a somewhat mild start to the severe weather season here, and our coordination with our spotter network went very well during our first few storms. Thanks to our fire departments for their willingness to deploy into the storms and provide us valuable information on what's happening during these storms. As we've seen in northeast Nebraska and northwest Iowa, the risk of severe weather remains significant. I encourage all of our departments within Story County to review their immediate actions that they will be taking if a dangerous situation occurs, and also their continuity of operations plans, which are key to being able to reestablish their public services should a disaster strike either their facility or the town that they reside in. Additionally, the rather wet start to June has begun to saturate the Skunk River Basin, and we've been closely monitoring the river for potential flooding. To recap, the deputy and I reviewed our to-do list on our whiteboard downstairs, and we've made significant progress on many issues. But for every task that we've taken off that board, we've replaced it with another. As I indicated earlier, I want to work individually with each section within the EOC to enhance their ability to use their workstation and to meet the requirements that we have down in the EOC. Fortunately, we've had overwhelming support from Story County staff in the past, and I anticipate the same in the future. Emergency management is also ready to take the next step and develop plans and processes to support a backup EOC. We look forward to working with facilities and other departments as we look to identify both a location and the support resources needed to fill this requirement. We also began the next round of plans revision. One of the major plans we are going to be tackling this year is going to be the recovery plan. This plan involves a large number of activities and stakeholders, but it's one that is essential to get right since it helps individuals, businesses, and communities get back on their feet and on the road to reestablishing normal life should we have a disaster. With that, I'd like to open it up to any questions you might have.
Just one for me. I just want you to confirm this for me. It's my understanding now that we have every community signed on to the 2080 with emergency management. Is that accurate?
No, sir. We're still waiting for Ames to provide us a signed 2080 adopted by their council.
But we have notification that Mayor Campbell has, in fact, been empowered to sign that. Is that accurate? I thought I saw something come across my desk that showed that.
What we received, or what I have received, as reference back to former addendums and additions to that 2080, but it did not indicate that they were going to adopt a new 2080. That's the emails that I've received.
Okay, well, let's you and I huddle on that then, because as I understand it, they have in fact empowered Mayor Campbell to sign off on the new one, and we just need to get that done so that we're moving down the road.
That'd be great.
Okay.
No questions, but a job well done. Keep up the good work.
Mm-hmm. Next, discussion with Alliant Energy regarding the lease agreement on the backup generator system. And is it the well field also, or just it's from Alliant Energy? It's Annette Renault. Morning, Annette.
Hi, Annette.
Like we've been talking about this for quite a while, but
what it is Alliant Energy. Previously, we used to do a lot of value-added products and services, and in that time, one of the things we participated with you on was a backup generation system for your Story County Justice Center, as well as the loop field for the geothermal system in the Justice Center. That went into effect in March 1 of 2002. On that contract that we have with you, that's a 20-year contract for both of those, both the geothermal and the well field. We are just over 12 years into that contract. Because a couple years ago, Alliant Energy, what we did was we refocused and we decided that value-added products and services, there's a lot of other entities that do that. We've regrouped to just being what our core business is with the utility. There were some areas that we downsized, and so as we have these contracts that we had out there, we no longer have the staff that really oversaw these. So what we're looking to do is there's a buyout clause in the contracts for these that would offer to you the ability to buy them out. So I do have the contracts with me, and I have a buyout schedule, but currently, just for your information, on the geothermal system, you pay $5,350 a month on that system, and on the generator, you pay $6,500 a month. So that's $142,200 per year. I've got a buyout schedule that we put together. It's a spreadsheet that details, and it's a sliding scale because every month you pay into that. So as of June, right now you have $1,102,050 left in that contract period. The buyout we're proposing for June would be $391,065. So that would be a savings of $712,000 over the life of the contract. Now, this is a sliding scale, and I have a copy of that I can give to you, and as well as email to you. Through the contracts that we have, the interesting thing is, you know, this is technically kind of a modified lease agreement. It really doesn't, neither contract really defines what happens at the end of this period. So we either have this discussion now and save the county money, or we're going to have this discussion in 8 years and try to figure out what we're going to do, because it doesn't define that you own it or that we own it. So, you know, I actually had this very same discussion with the city council last night in Nevada, because we have some streetlights, decorative streetlights, and so they opted to buy out of those, and we're going to be taking care of those. So wanted to bring this up with the supervisors. The generator system is really the one that we have the most maintenance on. We contract with Altorfer. They come out and perform monthly maintenance on those, and we also do black starts and different things just to maintain that system. They've got an emergency response as part of that contract that we have with them. That's something that when we renegotiated that contract, we made it so it would be assignable if the county wanted to take over that. That cost is not in that savings calculation. However, you know, you have a lot of facility staff in Story County that may be able to take over a portion of what Altorfer does and save the county even more money that way. So it's just something to consider, right? This is kind of your first look at this, but we wanted to at least bring this subject up and kind of get any questions you may have. I know what you mentioned, any maintenance records, and Altorfer has all those maintenance records that we have. You know, we get, like I said, monthly on that. So
that I'm clear on that, and I just want to make sure I'm understanding completely, roughly $1.1 million if we pay this thing out over the life of the contract, but you continue to do all the maintenance.
Correct.
$391,000 if we buy it out now, but we assume all the maintenance for the next 8 years then. And at this point, we don't know exactly what that cost is.
Well, and it really depends. I can come back. I don't have I can get that maintenance cost that we have. There still would be a significant savings to the county, because it's not a tremendous amount when you look at, you know, the $11,000 you're paying each month. The geothermal system, it's a loop field. There's very little maintenance that you would have to do on that. It's pipes and fittings. Really, it's the generator system. And I didn't want to bring that in and kind of, because there might be things you might want to renegotiate a complete new contract with Altorfer, and you may be able to do some of that on your own and do it in-house instead of contracting for it, whereas we contract 100% for it.
Absolutely. I'm just trying to figure out exactly what I'm looking at to try to compare apples to apples.
Right. And what I can do is I can give you an idea of what our monthly cost is for the maintenance.
I think that'd be really helpful.
Okay.
I think it would be helpful for us, Mr. Chair, as well, is that, you know, now that we've had, you know, this heard about this concept, we've got Cal here, our facility management director, to sit down with Jessica and a representative of the board to just further investigate, you know, the options that are currently there, so that we can, I mean, there are obviously questions that probably Cal may want to come up with and address, especially in terms of the maintenance aspect, and is some of this can be done in-house versus do we have to contract out? Looking at all of those kind of things, but I definitely think this is a situation that we fully should vet and take a look at, because potentially on the surface it sounds like it could be a win-win, but at the same time we got to know exactly what it is from the long-term implication of this facility.
Yeah, Wayne, I think you're 100% right. I mean, clearly it looks like if $391,000 plus whatever our total cost, including our staff time, that we've got to put in to maintain that system at its current operational level for the next 8 years, if that's less than $1.1 million, then it would appear to be a good deal for Story County. If it's not, I mean, if you get into it and let's say, oh, it's a simple system and it, you know, it flows around out there, but let's say we get in and you've got $1 million of repairs, now all of a sudden it's not a good deal. And so we just need to do our due diligence. And Annette, I'd say as much information as you could provide us would really be helpful. I'd ask that Cal and Jessica dig into this, and ultimately we're going to have to decide whether this is a good deal or not a good deal. Because as I understand it, if we say thank you but no, then we'll just ride this thing out for the next 8 years.
Correct. Mm-hmm. We're committed to doing either one. So,
absolutely.
You know, and I say, you know, we don't have, like, there were some of the value-added products and services that we've done away with some of those staff. We have other staff because we obviously have generators of our own to produce electricity. So that is who we rely on to maintain for maintenance on this.
Well, and I really appreciate the opportunity. I appreciate the opportunity for us to dig in and try to assess whether it's a good deal for Story County or not a good deal for Story County. So thank you.
Mm-hmm. If you could supply us with any information that you have, and then Jessica and Cal will get together with one of us, and we'll sit down and I would assume come up with a list of questions that
okay.
At some point, if it gets to that point, we would consider looking at a proposal.
Okay, sounds good.
Very good.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Liaison assignments and committee meetings, Wayne.
Just very briefly, I had a phone conversation with Deb yesterday, and just basically it was just making sure that the mental health regional board and advisory group was addressing some of the concerns on the management plan that is being submitted, and they are, and so we didn't have any new information. And then our next meeting is going to be next Monday afternoon here at 1:30. And hopefully there will probably be an agenda item that we'll be talking about as it relates to one of the plans that needs to be submitted by July 1st of this year. But we have received extension on timetables for some of the other things that are going. And we're not the only region that is undergoing this type of scrutiny from the Department of Human Services. So things look very promising from that standpoint.
Had a great trip out to D.C. with the Ames Chamber and Ames Economic Development Commission. Really excited to report to this group that we were able to, in fact, make some headway on land that is currently owned by the Army Corps of Engineers. It's basically the old roadbed of I-35 that they looped out to the east when they were talking about doing the reservoir up there just north of Ames, between Ames and Story City. And I fully expect that Mike Cox will have something on our agenda for next Tuesday. I would just encourage you guys to really dig into that. There is some cost involved in the county, but it's an opportunity that we've not had in the last, 2008 is when that land was slated to come to Story County. There, it was supposed to happen, Jessica, I think in 180 days back when it was put on the Army Corps' plate in 2008. We've been really arm wrestling through the years. It looks to me like we're at the point where the county can step in and say, no, we're ready to get this done now. It's about 200 acres. And like I say, it'll be on our agenda next week, so I'm just giving you a preview and letting you know to look for it, and please dig into it because time is of the essence if we decide to do something.
Okay.
And I didn't go anywhere, so I'll pass. Public forum number two, comment from the public on items not on this agenda. The board may not take any action on the comments due to the requirements of the open meeting law, but may do so in the future. Not seeing anybody move to the mic. Announcements from the supervisors. Wayne.
This afternoon, our safety committee is meeting at 2 o'clock. We've kind of extended it back a half an hour. And one of the things that is going to be proposed, and I will bring this to your attention, is from our visit with IMWCA, Dean Shady, one of the issues that they are strongly encouraging, and that is an internal auditing team. And as a safety committee, I think we need to be addressing members of our safety committee that want to serve on this internal auditing team. That will be a group of individuals that will go to the various building sites, whether it's secondary roads or conservation or this building or what have you, and periodically do some strategic checking on safety compliance issues and things. We'll get some assistance from IMWCA in terms of what are the kinds of things that we look for. But what it will do is it will probably go a long ways towards us completing one of the other requirements that is standing in the way of us receiving one of the good performance measures that some of the counties have received. As you well know, our mods have gone down. Our workers' comp has gone down to one of the lowest in the state. We want to be able to keep it there, and I think through this strategic auditing group, internal group, we can go to a department and look at some things and say, while we have not thought about this, this is, again, could be a potential safety hazard. We'd like to see that addressed and taken care of. And I think it's going to be very well received. So I'm looking forward to that meeting this afternoon. And then, of course, you guys are aware that we do have the drainage meeting this evening at State Center.
Well, Wayne, I just say I think the idea of the safety audit committee is a great one. It gives us an opportunity to standardize our safety practices from building to building and department to department. And so I'm just really, really appreciative that you're serving on that.
Well, I'd like to also say I would be remiss if I didn't give a great deal of thought to our chair. You know, Cal Pearson has just done a phenomenal job in leading the safety committee, and he was able to attend our site visit along with Brian Anderson from IMWCA, and when we had our strategic planning just last week, that was mentioned to the group. Cal is gone now, but I'll tell him this afternoon how much they appreciated, you know, having him along as we go through those site visits as well.
Well, without really thinking about it, I mean, the three of us have had multiple hires since we've been here, and this is not meant to compare or contrast. This is simply directed at Cal. That is a really good hire that we made. He does a great job.
Anything, Rick?
Nope.
I think as the chair of this board, I would be remiss if I did not pass along some information that we received yesterday from the Iowa Public Information Board. On June 11th, the Iowa Citizens for Community Improvement Group filed a complaint with that board in regards to the confined animal feeding operation hearing that we held on behalf of Lucas Chumlin, who is in the audience here today with his father. We received information yesterday from the Iowa Public Information Board that the complaint had been dismissed. And I want to give hats off to Mr. Keith Lechtel, who is the executive officer for that board, spent probably 3.5 hours listening to the audio for that entire meeting, and before he made his decision. But there is one sentence out of this 3 or 4 page letter that was sent out that I think is very very important that everybody hear. And it states that the Story County Board of Supervisors presided over one of the most open and democratic hearings I've ever heard. And
he's heard a lot.
He has heard a lot, and I just want to give my thanks to the two gentlemen that are on either side of me for the way that we've conducted these meetings in the past. I think since I've been on this board, we've had 6 CAFO applications come in front of us, including Mr. Chalmers. 3 of those have been expansions of existing facilities, and then with Chalmers, it would be 3 new facilities. And we've done more than a lot of other counties do, and I think some people think maybe we do too much, because this is a situation that we ended up in. But I'm just happy to say that the complaint has been dismissed, and I don't know if we've heard the end of this from ICCI or not, but as far as the open records complaint, I feel good about that. So
yeah, well, and let me just weigh in. The comment from Mr. Lechtel, I think, is absolutely appropriate. I'm appreciative that he made that comment. But, Paul, it has everything to do with the way you run meetings. You are so even-handed. You are welcoming of all opinions, and it is a pleasure to sit here and watch you run what can be contentious meetings from time to time. Along this lines, I've got a guest editorial in the paper today where I address some of the letters to the editor and some of the concerns that have been brought up. The reality is, for anybody who wants to take a fair look at it, Story County goes above and beyond. This is before us as a board. I mean, including us, but before us as a board, Story County has traditionally gone above and beyond what is required by law. But then Story County has traditionally followed the law at the end of the day, and that's all we've done. And I understand some people who feel really passionately about this being a little bent out of shape that it didn't go their way. But for me, you know, a sports analogy, blaming the referee when a game doesn't go your way is a little sad.
Well, thank you. No comments are necessary, but thank you again for your leadership, and that was good news from all concerned.
I appreciate it, both of you. Thank you. And with that, I'd take a motion for adjournment.
So moved.
Second.
Motion and a second. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. We're adjourned.